It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And yeah, we've been talking a lot of baseball, but NFL training camps, yeah, they're open. And not just that, preseason games are starting. The Giants, they open up the preseason this Thursday. But more important even than preseason games, this week also, joint practices with the Detroit Lions. And those joint practices often are more important for the starting players. You see more. So to talk about the Giants and what we are seeing so far, we bring in Art Stapleton, covers the Giants for the Bergen Record, North Jersey, USA Today, also host of All In with Art Stapleton podcast. Art, welcome to the program.
Hey, Lori, how you doing?
Doing just fine, thanks. And so let's start off with, you know, here we are early into training camp, but you've seen enough that I'm curious about some of the new faces. And let's start with, you know, there are a number of new coaches that the Giants have brought in. Of the new coaches, who has stood out to you as somebody that, I don't know, caught your eye and having an impact?
Boy, that's a good question. I think as far as the coordinators go, I think you know both of the new coordinators really have stood out since the spring, and that's defensive coordinator Shane Bowen and Michael Gobriel, who came over from the Jets. He's a special teams coordinator. I think, you know, as far as the position coaches, I would go. You know who I think really stepped into a great situation is Charlie Bullen is the new outside linebackers coach, mm-hmm. and you're talking about getting to coach a group with Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau at the top, and then you have a guy like Azeez Ojulari who's your third. So I'll say outside linebacker. And Charlie Bullen, the way he's worked. And I think one nugget off of that is the fact that Andre Patterson and Brian Cox, Patterson is the defensive line coach and Cox is the assistant defensive line coach, they've worked with Bullen. And that's something that is a change under the new defensive coordinator, Shane Bowen, and Brian Daboll has really pushed his assistant coaches to work together, the position groups to work together. So it's kind of interesting to see the defensive line and the offensive line, and the outside linebacker group work together. So that's where I'll go. I'll say the outside linebackers, and plus it doesn't hurt to have Brian Burns leading your group.
Yeah, I think all Giants fans forever grateful to Andre Patterson for what, you know, even just looking over the last year and with Lawrence, you know, what he's been able to do with Dexter Lawrence and, you know, watching the improvements there. But okay, you mentioned Brian Burns. Let's go there. Of the new players and the new faces, what's it like watching Burns in practice going up against other guys? What stands out?
His entire game plan, you can see he has a plan for rushing the passer, but also for playing the run. He hits his moves. You can see he's got a purpose. He hit a spin move the other day that, you know, fortunately for Daniel Jones, that it was, you know, a non-contact practice because he would have would have put him into next week. But one of the things I like about Burns that I noticed is that even when he's not on the field in the drill, you can tell he's watching and trying to pick up little tips, but also how is the defense coming together. I mean, a couple times I saw him kind of walk down the sideline a little bit to get a better angle. Like, you can see he was wanting to see how the front was coming together and what, you know, how the second and third team were rushing, or even if it was the first team without him on the sideline, which is rare. He's out there all the time. So I'd say that, you know, talking to teammates, how he's just kind of brought that different attitude, that the idea that, you know, they're all working together and they're trying to figure out how to get better. You know, you need your great players to work together, to want to pull everyone up. You know, and Dexter Lawrence had a line yesterday, Friday, that was very interesting. He said, "I don't want to go to the Pro Bowl alone." So, you know, that kind of idea of, you know, you can say all you want, Laurie, about having, you know, your players who haven't played very well, you have to get them better, right? You want to get your poor players to be average players. You want to get your average players to be good players. Well, you need your good players to be great players. And I think Burns kind of falls into that category. He's a guy who, you know, has been to a Pro Bowl, and he comes here with now a big contract, and we know who he is, but he wants more than that. You know, he wants to be a great player, and that goes for Dexter Lawrence and Andrew Thomas. You know, these are guys who are good players, probably the better players on the Giants roster. They need to find a way to go from good to great in order to be able to help this Giants team get to where they want to go, which is certainly not where they were last year.
In order for this Giants team to improve, let's face it, the offensive line is always top of mind for Giants fans because it's been a problem for, I don't know, more than a decade. And so let's start with, what's the latest on former Giants first-round draft pick Evan Neal?
Well, that's a good question. You know, Brian Daboll was kind of peppered about that earlier today in terms of where Neal is at and what's the latest on his injury situation. And I could tell you what I know is that on the first day of training camp, when they decided to put Evan Neal on the physically unable to perform list because his ankle just has not been responding since the spring, the same ankle that he had surgery on in January, you know, when they made the decision to move Jermaine Illuminor out to right tackle, that move, while not permanent for the remainder of the, you know, Giants tenure that Neal is here, it was basically, look, we can't count on Evan being on the field, you know, whether it's consecutive days, consecutive practices, for a month. You know, we've got to see what we can do in this group. So I give them credit for basically putting Illuminor at right tackle. He's a better right tackle than Evan Neal is right now. So where is Neal at? Neal is working with the training staff every day. My understanding is that the issue is not that he's not working hard, or the issue is not that they've given up on him completely as a player. The issue is essentially, you know, when you're a man who's 335 pounds and you are coming back from ankle surgery, you know, each guy will heal differently. And the idea that, you know, he can't go out there and take a full workload on his body right now, and they cannot risk putting him out there and then a day, a week later, he's now back on the sideline with the same ankle injury. So, long-winded answer, I think Evan Neal is kind of put into a different compartment right now, and I think the Giants need to figure out Evan Neal for being Evan Neal, but they can't allow Evan Neal to affect the 2024 New York Giants. So there are two different situations. Yes, it's a very important situation to figure out if Evan Neal can still play and get healthy, because we know the asset that was used to draft him, number 7 overall, but and for the 2024 New York Giants, if Evan Neal can't get on the field, then Evan Neal can't be a solution for this team, and they need to be able to look elsewhere. And I think that's where they're at right now. And if Neal becomes an issue, becomes a solution in a month, well, then they'll make that decision then. But they're not going to let him hold them back in terms of getting this offensive line straightened out as best they could.
Yeah, at a certain point, even though you're the seventh overall pick, there's a term, of course, in finance, a sunk cost.
And yes.
At a certain point, it becomes that. And as you said, the team made other arrangements and seems like they're moving on. And, you know, if Neal's ready, perhaps that, at some point, that's a bonus. But if you had to predict who are the opening day, what's the opening day line? And I guess the other part of it is another player that maybe was a little dinged up, but is he back and playing, is last year's starting center, John Michael Schmitz?
He's not back yet. I thought there was a chance that he would be able to get back, but he dinged his shoulder up in practice. What I was told is that he wrenched it, I guess it was in day two. He got caught with another teammate in the play. So he's trying to come back from the shoulder injury. He had a shoulder injury last year, but I was told that this is not the same thing. It's the same shoulder, but it's not related. So I think eventually John Michael Schmitz will be back in, you know, maybe later this week. The hard part is they don't want to just throw him out there and join practices right. If he hasn't gotten some practices, you know, just to get his feet wet out there. And that last thing you want is to put him out there against the Lions, who have a very good defensive line. Aleem McNeal is one of their defensive linemen who's very good on the interior. So I think Schmitz will end up being the starting center. I don't believe that it's an issue for week one right now. So I think he'll ultimately be at center. I think you'll have Andrew Thomas at left tackle. I think at left guard will be John Runyon. That left side of Runyon and Thomas, I think, is very solid. And I think what you'll end up having on the right side is essentially the right side that was in Las Vegas last year with offensive line coach Carm Brasillo. He's now with the Giants. I think you'll end up having Greg Van Roten, 34-year-old veteran, who just signed with the Giants last week. I think he's playing center now with Schmitz out. I think he'll slide over to right guard. And then Jermaine Illuminor will be at right tackle. And it could be Aaron Stinney, who started camp at left guard, is now at right guard. But I think Van Roten and Stinney will be in a competition at right guard to be able to see where that line is. But I think that's what you'll end up seeing. I think you'll see Thomas, Runyon, Schmitz, Van Roten, and Illuminor. And I think collectively, left to right, that is on paper a more experienced and a more talented offensive line than they had at any point really in the last 2 years with Brian Daboll as head coach. Now, best laid plans. We'll see what happens. We all know blocked field goal on the after the first drive last year, and Andrew Thomas pulls his hamstring, and disaster ensues. So we'll see what happens. But I think, you know, they made a point to go out and get experienced guys. It's not that they don't want to develop offensive linemen, but you need some experience now. You can't rely on younger players to come of age up front. They haven't had that, and now they went the other direction. So we'll see if that works.
Yeah, I think most Giants fans holding out hope at someday in their lifetime, a league average offensive line, that maybe that's not asking for too much.
And that's the crazy thing, right, Lori? Yeah. I mean, all they have to do is be middle of the pack.
Yeah.
I mean, this offensive line was so bad last year and had so many injuries and so many guys playing out of position. The reality is if they moved this offense with an offensive line that was middle of the pack, now all of a sudden you're talking about maybe your skill players and, you know, maybe Daniel Jones has half a chance to reach the ceiling that he hit in Minnesota 2 years ago in the playoffs that earned him that big contract. And, you know, maybe he's a little bit closer to that performance than where he was last year, which, you know, last year nobody at the Giants wants to relive.
Art, is there a fatal flaw that's super obvious and hiding in plain sight mistake that they're making this season, like they have in the past few? And I say that examples would be where Giants fans who want to have confidence in Joe Shane, Brian Daboll, this Giants administration of leadership. And then they see things last season where any Giant fan would have said that the, you know, you referenced Andrew Thomas getting hurt in the first game, that Josh Azudu was the backup plan at swing tackle, at left tackle, and he didn't take a rep at that in the preseason, and he seemed as surprised as anyone that that was, that he was the backup left tackle, or that Eric Gray was the answer at punt returner, and they started the season with essentially, you know, it was obvious if you saw it in the preseason, he didn't really look like a punt returner. There were things like that sometimes that they've done that for people who seem smart and competent, you see that. Is there anything on this year's team where you look at it and you say, all right, this is just not a sensible plan?
Yeah, I mean, that is a great question. The Gray thing, certainly it was one of those things where they would hope that they hoped last year that he was getting more comfortable. They had to justify having a fifth round pick, you know, that was a rookie in that spot. And I think, you know, obviously in hindsight, they're never going to do that again. You know, just the idea of having, you know, all of a sudden, what a difference you bring in just a league average returner and Gunnar Olszewski, and look how that made such an impact. I think where everybody is going to look, and it has to go there, is at cornerback. Yep. Everybody knows cornerback is, you know, they went out and they got Burns, and, you know, Joe Shane said, if we watch Hard Knocks, basically said to Shane Bowen in his office, this is probably what you're going to get. This is the one big fish that we can get you. And if I get you Burns, and he kind of joked at the combine, you know, I might have to play corner for you. You know, when you're the general manager and you kind of make that joke, I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those things where you understand, you know, you need some of these guys. You know, Shane needs, you know, Cordell Flott, who we picked in the third round 2 years ago, to step up now. Now it's time. You know, you have a third round pick who can play opposite a first round pick at corner. Like, on paper, there's no reason why you shouldn't have a third round pick and give him an opportunity to win that job. So that's probably the one in plain sight that, you know, we're all talking about, and, you know, they're still not going to go out there and, you know, from everything I've been told, they're, you know, trying to stick to whatever plan they have, and they don't feel like they should overcompensate financially to bring in a guy like a Stephon Gilmore. People have talked about, you know, well, why don't they just get this guy? Because I think the Giants are being honest with where they are. You know, if in October, then all of a sudden that this team is competing a lot higher in this division and being having an opportunity to truly compete, then maybe Shane does go out and make a trade for a corner to come in if corner. But it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you don't get the corner, you're probably not going to be good enough to get to that point. But if your guys play good enough to get to that point, well, then why are you going to go buy the corner when you could just use the guys you have? So that's the spot. I think they're going to spend the next couple weeks, their pro personnel department, and, you know, they have the sixth overall waiver priority, and, you know, the average fan doesn't want to hear that because it's, you know, it's more inside football than anything else. But, you know, there are guys on this team that are starting, or, you know, key contributors, Jason Pinnock, you know, Nick McLeod, guys who they picked up 2 years ago when they had the fifth overall waiver priority. I mean, you know, the Jets let Pinnock go. The Giants liked him. The Giants brought him in, and now all of a sudden he was a starter with over 1,000 defensive snaps last year, and now he's arguably their best safety right now on the roster. So that's what they're going to do. I think they're going to work the waiver wire and see if they can get one of those corners that springs free from somewhere and see if they can mix and match. You know, they had success with a guy like Fabian Moreau a couple years ago. Yeah. See if they can do something like that again. But, yeah, to answer your question, the corner spot opposite Deontay Banks is definitely something that, you know, we're all talking about it. Everyone knows about it. You know, 3 weeks into the season, if they're having a problem at corner, it's not that we haven't talked about it. It's just they've made the choice about what they've, you know, how they've built this team, and they'd much rather they'd have Brian Burns. If they didn't have Brian Burns, they probably would have drafted a corner in the early second round with that second round pick that they ended up trading as part of the package to get Burns from Carolina.
You mentioned Nick McLeod. I think a lot of Giants fans who saw him play last season were pleasantly surprised. He seemed competent, at least. Is he getting an opportunity to be that number two corner, or is it just they want Cordell Flott to earn that spot somehow?
I think it's both. McLeod, and I've said this, and I've written this, and I've actually talked to people at the Giants, and they said the one thing that I've been surprised at is that Nick McLeod hasn't gotten more of a consistent opportunity to win that job on the outside. You know, he started camp in the nickel spot, in the slot, that really over the last, I'd say, five practices, Drew Phillips, the third-round rookie, has really taken over that nickel spot. So McLeod is kind of that Mr. Versatile. You know, he played a little safety last year. He played nickel. He can play on the outside. But why is Nick McLeod not the guy who you're turning to? And I think they want Cordell Flott to win that job. So I think they're going to give Flott the opportunity, but it wouldn't surprise me if Flott really does not perform well over the next couple weeks. And, you know, that's why these joint practices against Detroit are so interesting, is that, you know, you're used to seeing, you know, Malik Nabers with the Giants doing really, really well against Flott and Banks and giving him a hard time. Well, is it because Nabers is really good? Well, we know he's really good, but is it just because of who he's going against? So that's why you want to see if Amon-Ra St. Brown goes out there and he's being guarded by Banks and Flott in practice over the next couple of days, who's doing what against whom? And I think that's an interesting spot. But yeah, McLeod, look, he's gonna get a contract right around $3 million this year, and he's their best special teamer. But I think he can have a role in this defensive system. Just a matter of how significant that role can be.
Talking to Art Stapleton about the Giants, and so you mentioned the joint practices. What are you most looking forward to seeing at the joint practices?
I think it has. There are several things. I mean, I mentioned Burns and Thibodeau. I think going against Decker and Penei Sewell, Taylor Decker and Penei Sewell are the tackles for Detroit. I think that'll be interesting, just based on, you know, a year ago in Detroit, the Giants, you know, went out there, got off the buses. They were the team that were in the playoffs the previous year. The Lions, if you remember, on the final night of the season, they knocked off the Packers, prevented the Packers from getting in the playoffs. But then the Lions didn't make it. But still, last year, everybody was talking about how good the Lions were going to be. You know, Giants went in there, and that first day out in Detroit, I mean, the Lions jumped them. I mean, they dominated them offensively, defensively. The Giants bounced back a little bit on the second day, but the Lions were the team that, you know, really took control of a joint practice. And I think you want to see a little of that this week. You know, the Giants, do they kind of protect their home? You know, this is something different for the Giants. They haven't had a joint practice at home before. The only thing they've had with fans, they haven't had one with fans. They had one without fans when the Jets were here a couple years ago. But it's been a while since they've had joint practices in New Jersey with, you know, the Giants as the host team. So I'd say those guys, you want to see what Malik Nabers does. I'll give you a little quick anecdote from Malik Nabers. The day after the draft, when he came in and had his press conference, he was asked which defensive back, which corner did he go against in college that he can't wait to see in the pros? And his answer immediately was Terrion Arnold, who's from Alabama. Obviously, Nabers was from LSU. Well, Terrion Arnold is the first-round draft pick of the Detroit Lions and will be out on the field the next 2 days. So they had their battles in college. So a lot of people have mentioned Carlton Davis, who is the free agent from Tampa that Detroit brought in at one corner spot. I want to see Nabers and Arnold go against each other. They're guys who know each other from college, and I think Nabers would leave the Giants feeling a little bit better about themselves offensively if he comes out here and does to Detroit what he's been doing to their own corners in practice. So I'd say that those are probably the two spots, the corners and then not the edge guys for the Giants, and then obviously whatever Malik Nabers is doing. And never hurts that Dexter Lawrence is going up against an All-Pro and Frank Ragnow at center for Detroit. I want to see that too, and see you know, good on good and great on great, and see if those guys could perform. And you know, we haven't even mentioned Daniel Jones. So what Daniel Jones?
Yeah, I was about to say to you, from a Daniel Jones standpoint, I know he's obviously been making his way back, all of that, and you know, seems physically healthy. But in joint practices, what, if anything, you know, would you be hoping to see from Daniel Jones?
You know, they're going to do more 7-on-7. The Giants haven't done any 7-on-7, which is essentially a passing drill, right? There's no linemen involved, and it's just, you know, basically when you go to, like, 7-on-7 passing leagues, that's what you would have. They did it all Jones did in the spring was 7-on-7 passing, and now when they got to camp, they've done just 11-on-11 team drills, and they will do some 7-on-7 against Detroit. So I think what's interesting is that what the timing aspect that Jones hasn't had with his receivers, because they jumped right into the drills with team-oriented 11-on-11 with the rush coming into the pocket. And Brian Daboll said that was one of the things that they wanted for Jones, is that they wanted to give him immediately the feel for how's he going to react in the pocket, how's he going to react to the rush, is he going to be able to move in and out, navigate the pocket with his knee, and will he be comfortable? And now he's looked pretty comfortable in practice, but his timing with his receivers has not been great. It's been what they've kind of been working on. So I think going into the 7-on-7, the passing drills, I think it might help Jones a little bit in that he's now not worried about the rush, and now he can just kind of focus on the timing with his receivers. So I think Daniel Jones has an opportunity to really, you know, have a good day getting out of the gates on Monday, because they're doing more 7-on-7 than they will team drills. But, you know, it's still a work in progress. It's pretty crazy, Lori. If I had told you back in the spring, if Daniel Jones was even on the field, let alone he's taken every first team rep in camp, and we're talking through 8 practices, it's pretty amazing recovery for a guy who tore his ACL the first week of November. I give him credit for that. There's still, we know what Daniel Jones needs to be, and you know, we don't know if he's going to be that quarterback until he gets out there on the field, and you know, everything is live, and teams are chasing him down, and the Minnesota Vikings are trying to make him make mistakes downfield. If Daniel Jones can, you know, revert back to where he was the last time he saw Minnesota. That's always the ironic part of this season. As soon as I saw that opener pop up and it was the Minnesota Vikings, you know, yet another prove it season for Daniel Jones, and he gets to go against the one franchise that, other than the Washington Commanders, that he actually dominated back in 2022. And if it wasn't for the Minnesota Vikings, who knows if Daniel Jones would have ever gotten that big contract. But he did, so different scenario in Minnesota now with Brian Flores as defensive coordinator and all that stuff. But seeing that uniform certainly won't give Daniel Jones nightmares. I think seeing that uniform, you know, if fans want to think back to when Daniel Jones was at his best, there's no better game that Daniel Jones has played since that playoff game in Minnesota against the Vikings 2 years ago.
All right, last one before I let you go. So speaking of Giants quarterbacks, Eli Manning. It was bobblehead day at Yankee Stadium throughout the first pitch. And, of course, this is also Hall of Fame induction weekend. And so couldn't help but think ahead that as we move into the new year, Eli Manning will be on the Hall of Fame ballot for the first time. Will he be inducted a year from now?
You know, you hear these straw polls that are taken, and, you know, we all know about polling in many, many facets, what polling means and how accurate it is. But, you know, I think there's always going to be a bias against New York. The idea, you know, why is it hard? You know, Bill Parcells didn't get in the first time on the ballot. And, you know, that, you know, Harry Carson had to wait, 16 years to get on into the Hall of Fame. I think ultimately if there's this national feeling of Eli and what he accomplished and truly look at what he accomplished rather than look at how his career finished. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. If he's going to get in the first ballot, you know, it's going to take some work, I think, for people who are going to present him. But also, if he doesn't get in the first ballot, then if I'm a Giants fan, then I'm a little bit concerned because you know what's coming after the fact. Then after he's done, now all of a sudden, now he's going to be grouped with Ben Roethlisberger and Philip Rivers year later.
Drew Brees and, I mean, they all start coming. Tom Brady.
And then some guy named Brady that's coming up. And then, you know, so I think there needs to be a full-blown, like, push for Eli for next year because if he doesn't get in that first year, then, you know, it's one of those things where it's not necessarily slam dunk based on his resume, but it's also what other resumes is he going to now be put up against? So, you know, it'll be interesting. I think he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. I think, you know, even Giants fans, Lori, and you know this, look at Eli's resume a lot differently than maybe they should. And the idea is the perception that Eli was carried to a Super Bowl by his defense twice is utterly ridiculous. Eli Manning carried that team in 2011. I mean, carried that team in the regular season, carried that team in the postseason. And what he did in 2007 in that postseason, he's not given credit for enough because people look at that defense and what they did to Brady and the Patriots. But what Eli did in those two postseasons, is that enough to change people's minds and look past the idea that he was a 500 quarterback in the regular season? Well, it remains to be seen, but don't tell me Eli was carried to a Super Bowl because he carried that Giants team, especially in 2011, to that second Super Bowl in Indianapolis.
Well, off the top of my head, I think it's 15 touchdown passes, 2 interceptions across those 2 postseason runs. And I'm with you. I mean, the 2011 season, that NFC championship game in the rain in San Francisco behind that offensive line where he just was on the turf in the mud play after play and somehow got the job done. So, go back and study the tape of both those postseason runs. And it looks like, you know, smells like, sounds like a Hall of Famer. Art Stapleton from The Record does a great job covering the Giants, and we'll be following your work this week with the Giants and joint practices. Thanks so much, Art. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Lori. Have a good night.
All righty. Philip from Jamaica, I see you. You want to talk some Mets baseball? Mets, Yankees, Giants, Jets, whatever you want to talk about. 888-808-1019. We'll take a break. Come back with an update and your calls.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.